Who died last week?
Sarah.
Right. Okay. In our biblical story, who died last week? Okay. Where is she buried? Machpelah, why is that significant? First land that Abraham owned in Canaan. Who did he buy it from? The Hittites. Okay. He got it for what price?
Full price.
Yeah, okay, very good. I thought there would be someone very exact and tell us exactly how much it was. Okay. There was something that Abraham could not carry out himself, but had a servant do it. Got a wife. Where did he want this wife to come from for Isaac? From his relatives in what area? Okay, Mesopotamia, but specifically Haran, which is where he came from, right? What was it that the servant was sworn to do and not to do? Not to what? Yeah, you can't take Isaac there. And you are not, he is not to marry who? Canaanite women. Why did we say that was significant given who this book is written to? Israelites. There's a passage in Deuteronomy. Do you know what chapter? Where it says that the children of Israel are not to marry Canaanite women or Canaanite men. Deuteronomy 7. I really encourage you to know the book of Deuteronomy, because it is a key to understanding Israel, and it is a key to understanding the rest of the Old Testament. It really is. Everything that happens after that hinges on Deuteronomy. In fact, when Josiah rebuilt the temple, what book did he find that scared him to death? It was Deuteronomy, which has the blessings and the curses in it. And it went far enough that when he read it, he went, wow, this is really bad. Because he knew how far along they were on the curses. Okay, that was good. Genesis 25. We are introduced here to another slave wife of Abraham. And her name is Keturah. Abraham had a bunch of sons by this person. Why did we not learn about this earlier? Well, they're not in the heritage. So here's a question for you. Let's have someone read Romans 4, verses 18 and 19. Romans 4, 18 and 19. First one to get it, just go ahead and read it.
Who, contrary to hope, in hope believed, so that he became the father of many nations, according to what was spoken, so shall your descendants be.
Okay, I might have blown it here.
One more verse, and not being weak in faith.
That's it, yes.
He did not consider his own body already dead, since he was about 100 years old, and the deadness of Sarah's womb.
So I have a question for you, based on this passage that Paul writes. Was Abraham really capable of having children before God intervened? Yes, but this passage, what does it say about Abraham considering himself? What did he think? That he could not do it either. So here's a question. Is the story of Keturah a catch-up story or a sequential story? Well, that depends on your translation. Yeah, or New American Standard says, now Abraham took another wife. I would say there are two valid views of this passage. Either God enabled Abraham to have children later in life, and he continued with Keturah to have children, although I wonder how many of these would have made it to a mature enough age had he had them after Sarah to send them away. Or was this a slave wife who wasn't material to the story and that he married her earlier? Remember, he had a large group of men. Do you remember that? So, go ahead, Norma.
Well, there's a line that I've noticed in this movie that Abraham, verse 6, but Abraham gave gifts to the sons of the concubines.
Yes. That's a good point. And to me, here's what I think. You don't have to pay attention to this, but here's what I think. All right. I think that Abraham had many slave wives. The reason we're told about Sarah and Hagar is because Sarah was his primary wife, and Hagar was the wife designated in his covenant with his second, with his primary wife, to provide the heir if she can't. So all the focus would be where? Right. That's what I think. You know what? I can't prove that. So take it for what it's worth. There is an alternative view. Apparently, Abraham found new potency after the birth of Isaac, since he had earlier considered his body as good as dead reproductively. That maybe when God enabled this, he continued to have children after that. I have a problem with that on a chronology basis, because when how old was Abraham when Sarah died? About 147. He would have been about 150 when Isaac was married to Rebekah, which means that Jacob and Esau would have been about 5 when he died. And so could these children have reached maturity to a point that he could pack them up and send them off to the east? It'd be pretty tough, right? Could it have happened that way? Yes. Does it matter? What does matter about this text? Yep. What does he do? He considers only Isaac as his heir and sends everybody else away. There's also something else in here. Moses is married. Who is Moses married to? Oh, I do mean to say Moses. Who is Moses married to? This goes back to, I said in the very beginning, who would be the audience for this book? The children of Israel, who are just left Egypt. Who is their leader? Moses is telling them that you are not to make marriages with the Canaanite women. Who is Moses married to? A Midianite. Where did the Midianites come from? Came from Abraham's seed. Which would make a relative. And so his marriage would be
in the family.
In the family, okay. So, I told you that there are things in here that I'm sure needed explanation. In fact, did Moses ever have any disputes with his brothers and sisters about his wives? Yes, he did. Okay, not that one. Yeah, I'm never good at figuring that out. I had to sit down with a calculator to figure out how old Jacob and Esau were when Abraham died. So, okay. Well, Abraham does die, verses 7 through 11. Abraham breathed his last, died in a ripe old age, 175, I would say, is ripe and old. An old man, satisfied with life, and he was gathered to his people. Where is he buried? Cave of Machpelah, next to Sarah. You notice he's not buried with Keturah. He's not buried with Hagar. He's buried with Sarah. The key thing is in verse 11. It came about after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac. And Isaac lived by Beer Lahairoi. Why do I say it's key that the text tells us that Isaac was blessed by God? Continuing of the promises, right? When God is referred to by the children of Israel, quite often, or when God introduces himself to the children of Israel, he says, I am the God of him, Isaac, and Jacob. When Jesus answers the question from the Sadducees in Matthew 22, and he asked, they said, you know, gave the question, the tricky little question that's supposed to throw Jesus off, that this guy followed the Levirate law of marriage, and this woman was married to seven brothers and never had a child by any of them, and in the resurrection, whose wife will she be? And he said, well, they don't, Jesus said, you don't understand what you're talking about, because first of all, there is no marriage in heaven. And the second part is, have you erred? Have you never read that I am the God of Abraham, Jacob, of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Therefore, he is not the God of the dead, but the God of the living. So, it's really important that we see from the text that Isaac was blessed by God in the same way that Abraham was. All right. The last thing here is 12 through 18. We get the generations of Ishmael. Now, if you remember, how have genealogies been presented in Genesis so far? We get one of two types. Or I should say there are two types. There is the type of those that are in the lineage of Christ, and then there are the lineage of those who are no longer going to be covered in the story. And we get the genealogy or the generations of Ishmael. The thing that's probably meaningful about the generations of Ishmael are two things. God promised that Abraham, he would be the father of many nations, right? And so through Ishmael, there will be nations that come about. Yep. There's also a man in here, I believe if I've got the name right. Let me find it here. Nebaioth, or Nebaioth. And he will figure in this story only in a minor way, because he will have a daughter who will marry Esau. Okay, and so, and we'll see why he married that daughter in a little bit. All right, this leaves us that the story of Abraham is now complete. We move on to Isaac, but one of the things I find very interesting in the book of Genesis is that Isaac's life really doesn't get much coverage. If you look at Genesis, there are three primary characters. Who are they? Abraham, Jacob, and Joseph. All of those characters lead us to why Israel is in Egypt. Okay? Which, if you're the children of Israel, what would you want to know? How did we get there, and why is God coming to take us out? Right? Why does God even care about us? Now, with Isaac, we just kind of... He gets married. How old is he? Now we just breeze ahead 20 years. And all is really said about those 20 years, and this I'm starting in Genesis 25:19. You're starting the story of Isaac because it starts with a very familiar refrain in Genesis. How do you know you're starting a new section?
This is the genealogy.
Yes. Now these are the records of the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. And Isaac took a wife named Rebekah, by the way. She is the sister to Laban, who is related to Abraham's brother, right? And on top of that, she has a family condition. What is wrong with Rebekah?
Barren.
She's barren. What does Isaac do about that? Yes. And how long does he go without having children? 20 years. Do you see any familiarity here in the family pattern? That did Isaac just, everything just fell on him and everything went swimmingly, right? In fact, pretty much what we're going to read about Isaac is, what kind of life does Isaac have? But no problems? Got trouble right off the bat. His wife can't have children. And then we're going to find out that he has two of the best sons ever. And he has no children and starts with twins, right? So Isaac intervened on her behalf. He prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. And the Lord answered him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. What it does say about Isaac is, has he picked up something from his father? Dependence on the Lord, and starts with P, ends with E. Patience, which can also mean endurance. So he believed in the promises. He went to God and asked him to help his wife Rebekah. Had he ever seen anything before that would lead him to believe that God would do such a thing? Yeah, his own story, right? And so what we learn from that is the effective prayer of a righteous man can accomplish much. Now, Rebekah has a pregnancy with twins. And it must have been some kind of pregnancy. Because Rebekah has, what's going on inside the womb? A struggle. So much so that what does it drive her to do? Well, the first question she asked herself, if all is well with this pregnancy, why am I like this? I love this. These are real people. They have problems. I'm supposed to be having a baby. By the way, they don't have sonograms and they don't have ultrasounds, so she doesn't know how many are in there. But she does know this. Something's going on, right? And she goes to inquire of the Lord. The Lord tells her, you have two. Whoa, I went with none, now I'm at two. We're going to do the whole family in one shot. So, these two peoples will be separated from your body. Notice, God does not say there are two children in your womb. What does he say? Two nations, two different peoples, and what will be their relationship? Well, it's going to be, one shall be stronger than the other. Well, your natural inclination would be, who will be the best? Or who will be top dog? Firstborn. But no. The older shall serve the younger. By the way, a lot of people get hung up on Malachi chapter 1 because it says, Jacob I love, but Esau I've hated. What is it talking about? Well, I think more like, I chose Israel. I did not choose Edom. Right? I chose Israel, who is the descendant, who are the descendants of Jacob, and I did not choose Edom, who are the descendants of Esau. Now, the birth reflects and confirms that God's revelation, because when the birth takes place, what happens? Well, Esau comes out, but Jacob is hanging on to his ankle. This struggle's been going on, and they struggle right even for who goes down the birth canal first. And Esau comes out, and he is just as white as the driven snow. He's red, and he's hairy. He's red all over, right? Jacob comes out. We don't really get too much of a description there. But what we do know is these children were named appropriately, especially Jacob. Whenever the secondborn is fighting to be with the firstborn to take their place, he is called a supplanter, right? Or one, literally, who takes by the heel. So Esau, if he doesn't know it, is in a contest from the word go. Isaac's 60 when the children are born. Now, you can tell that we've got to get to a point, right? Because what happens? We get a long history of how these two children grew up. What do we get? Fast forward. We find out Esau became a skillful hunter and a man of the field, and Jacob was a peaceful man living in tents. I find this interesting because I kind of got the impression that Isaac was a peaceful man. Because when Rebekah comes to him, what is he out in the field doing? Meditating. I think what you have to take from this is that Esau loved to hunt, and he was a man of the field. Jacob was interested in the family business, which is being a shepherd and a nomad. Well, Dad loves a man's man. Esau's out there hunting and doing all this kind of stuff, and Isaac likes that. Mama is more impressed with Jacob because he's interested in what it really takes to run this thing. The problem was it kind of settled into a game of favorites. Right? Isaac preferred Esau, and Rebekah preferred Jacob. And the problem here, and I've got to say this, I don't think Isaac did anything to encourage it, but Mama's working. And we should always remember that we're going to meet her brother. Was it that Laban was kind of a sneaky guy? And I kind of see in Rebekah, there's some family traits there, right? Well, go ahead. Oh, yeah, she was. But who should have worked that out? God, right? She's going to help it along. Now, Esau, you need to understand this. In the people's way of thinking, if there were two sons, they would take the entire inheritance and break it into three equal parts. And the oldest child would get two of those shares, and the youngest child would get one. So Esau comes in from wandering around while Jacob's at home working, doing Esau's out hunting, and he comes in, And apparently it wasn't a very good hunting trip. Because he comes in and he's worn out and he's famished. You ever been like that? Blood sugar's low. You could just about die in a chair. And you come in and you smell something great is cooking on the stove. There's old Jacob over there cooking up something really nice, some nice red stew. You can imagine kind of a cold day comes in. He's really hungry. Jacob sees him come in. He says, sell me your birthright. What is that to me? I'm going to die if I don't eat. You think that really was going to happen? Yeah, you know, an inheritance is just not worth much if you're dead. What does this reveal about Esau's character?
Shallow,
right? The amazing thing is, I could see where Esau said it and thought flippantly of it. Yeah, right. I'll sell you my birthright. And he eats it. Now, the text says, he ate, he drank, and he rose, and he went on his way. Thus, Esau despised his birthright. So whether or not Esau, I'm going to have to take it at face value from the text, that maybe Esau, in the moment, I'm hungry, doesn't matter. He didn't protect that thing which should have been of great value to him. It's interesting, in the New Testament, it will be say that Esau was a profane man because he didn't value this. That birthright went with a blessing. And that blessing was an inheritance from God. And I'm sure it was talked about in their family. Can you imagine Abraham as a grandfather with these young boys telling them that God gave our family a special blessing? And you are going to inherit that blessing. And Esau just walked away from it. Now, we're kind of left with that's what happened. And now we get, oh, and what was things like with Isaac and Rebekah? Now, this could have been going on during the time the boys were growing up. I don't know. But there's a famine in the land. And what do people in Canaan do when there's a famine in the land? They move to Egypt, right? Because there's the Nile, and no matter what else is going on, the Nile rises, floods, and there's food to eat, always there. And if you're a shepherd, you can drive your sheep up to the Nile Delta, where it's really green and pretty and there's lots of grass to eat, and you can raise your sheep up there. But God appears to him and says, what does he say to him? Do not go down to Egypt. That's sort of a direct command. Stay in the land of which I shall tell you. Sojourn in this land. I will be with you and bless you. For to you and your descendants I will give all these lands, and I will establish the oath which I swore to your father Abraham. Watch what he does here. The first thing he does, I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven. Who has he said that to before? Abraham. It's the nation promise, right? I will give your descendants all these lands. There's the land promise. And by your descendants, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. You're starting to get an idea that these three things are really important. And what is God doing to Isaac? He's saying, stay here. I'm going to make all this happen for you. I find it interesting that of the patriarchs, Abraham had to go there, leave there, come back. But Abraham and God worked together to build a fence around Isaac, and Isaac never, ever left Canaan. Because the point was to make him understand and to make the descendants understand, this is your place. I'm giving it to you. Don't go to Egypt. Don't go off to Assyria. Don't wander off back to your family. stay here. I'll take care of you. Now, it's also interesting to note that when he restates the promises to Isaac, he says, I'm doing this because Abraham did something. Yes, he obeyed me, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes and my laws. I think that statement was put in there for two reasons. One, that's what was said to Isaac to say, I told you to stay, and I'm commanding you to stay here. And if you want to be blessed, keep my commandments. And I think it was also there because we're now trying to drive home a point to the children of Israel. I will look after you. I will give you the promised land. I will fulfill my promises I made to Abraham. You need to keep my commandments. By the way, what do you think he would say to us? I promised you a promised land. And I promise to bless you. I expect you to keep my commandments and walk in my statutes and keep my ways. And if you do, you will be blessed, right? So Isaac shows that he does trust God and he never leaves Canaan. However, when he gets to Gerar and he meets the new Abimelech, because this is about 80 years later, folks, so the chances are that it's the same guy or slim. And he gets there, and the family tradition raises its head again. And he gets there, and he announces to the people when they say, hey, who's that really good-looking woman with you? Oh, that's Rebecca. She's my sister. Now, remember, Abraham and Sarah were married under the laws of Haran. Guess who else was married under the laws of Haran? Or would have followed their covenant? So they still have that little bit of the wife-sister covenant going here. So technically, it's not totally a lie, but it's meant to deceive, right? What does that tell me about great men of faith? Are they flawless? They're human. And what does 1 John 1:10 say? If we say that we have no sin, we lie, and the truth is not in us, right? So Abimelech observes, though, one day, after a long time, by the way, he's looking around, and one day he sees Isaac over there with his sister. And he's nuzzling her. In a way that you probably wouldn't expect someone to nuzzle their sister. And he's a sharp guy. He goes, hey, certainly she is your wife. How then did you say she is my sister? And Isaac stammered around and didn't have an answer for that. What did he say? Absolutely the same answer. Well, what was the answer? What's that? Yeah, I'm pretty sure you evil people that I decided to come down here and enjoy your hospitality would kill me. Abimelech takes a different view of this. Look, by your deception, if we had laid with you, I have this funny feeling that they all knew about what happened with Abraham, because he's like, what would happen if we had laid with her? Or somebody had taken her as our wife? What would have happened to all of us? Yeah. So what is motivating Isaac to lie? Boy, if you haven't picked up on this, that's it. Lack of faith. What has God just promised him before this incident? Stay here. I will give you this place. You will have descendants, which I will take care of you. Take care of you means I'm not going to let you get killed while I'm taking care of you. Now, remember, there's a famine. That's what drove him down here. And Isaac sows some crops. What happened? He got a hundredfold increase. He got the biggest harvest around. Now imagine you're the Philistines. And this guy moves in amongst you. He tries to deceive you. And then he farms in the middle of a famine. And what happens? He gets a huge harvest. In fact, it says, the Lord blessed Isaac. He became rich, continued to grow richer until he became very wealthy. And remember, he inherited everything that Abraham had. So this is getting big, right? And the Philistines envied him. And they thought, well, we know how to get back at a guy who's got all these herds. We'll just go fill in all those wells he's depending on. What do you suspect that was about? Could you leave, please? In fact, they get right down to it. Apparently, Isaac wasn't much of one to move over something like that. And so the king has to go out to him and says, go away from us, for you are too powerful for us. So Isaac moved away from that city-state to the valley of Gerar and settled there. And he gets there, and he's the first thing you need when you got large herds. Water, right? And so he basically says, go out. He tells his servants, I need you to go out and dig a well. So he goes to the first one. And as soon as he hits this beautiful well that's spring water. Oh, man, that had to be terrific. And the Philistines claim it. It's ours. It belongs to us. You can't have that. Isaac names that well Esek, which means contention. And he moves over and he builds another well. And the Philistines text says they quarreled over that one too. And it was called Sitna, which means enmity. Seems like Isaac's getting it now. The enmity now, he now sees the Philistines as enemies, who had actually seen him as an enemy. Then Isaac moves to another place and he digs this well and the Philistines don't say anything to him. And he calls that one Rehoboth, which means broad places. And he says, at last the Lord has made room for us and we will be fruitful in the land. One of the things that you can pick up on this is Isaac a fighter. He is a man of peace. He will move, do whatever he has to do to have peace. Somebody else might have fought over this, but not him. He just moves on. Now, he goes up to Beersheba. And remember, this has been a pretty trying time. Every time he tries to dig a well, they fight with him over it. He's been asked by the king of the Philistines to leave their area. And basically, Isaac's his faith might be faltering a bit, and he's got some fear. And God appears to him, and he says, I am the God of your father. Do not fear, for I am with you. I will bless you and multiply your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham. Isaac built an altar there and pitched his tent there, and Isaac's servants dug a well. I think the fact that he pitches his tent there and digs a well and puts an altar in says what? God says he's going to protect me. I'm good. I'm staying here. Now, the interesting thing is, you probably would think, well, we're done with those Philistines, but they send a negotiating team over to him. They send an advisor and they send Phicol, the general of the army. And they start their negotiation, and Isaac says, you know, let's just get this out on the table. Why are you here since you hate me and you sent me away? That's a pretty logical question, isn't it? why are you, I left, I did what you asked, now you're here. And you want a negotiation with me? And basically, the Philistines, they just kind of breeze over that statement. Well, we see plainly that the Lord has been with you, so we said, let there now be an oath between us, even between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you, that you will do us no harm. Who's been harming who? Just as we have not touched you and have done nothing but good and have sent you away in peace. Well, that's the best spin you could put on it, right? I think they're pretty debatable. But Isaac diplomatically ignores the issues and says, and just goes on. They have to admit that Isaac is blessed. In fact, the Philistines recognize you are now blessed of the Lord. I think that's what's motivating them. They don't want all this wealth and power that Isaac's accumulating to be turned on them. Well, they seal the treaty and the covenant, and they do it in the usual way. They get up in the morning, they have breakfast. You can imagine they cut the animals in half and walked between them, because when you walk between those animals cut in half, what are you saying? Keep my word, or I end up like this. Okay, so how's Isaac doing? Well, he settles down. Now, one last thing, so we'll be set up for next week. We get another insight into our friend Esau. Esau got married, and he married two women. And who did he marry? He married Canaanite women. What did Isaac and Rebekah think of that?
They were grieved.
They were grieved, yep. In fact, to put it, how do I say this? I like the way the New American Standard put this. They brought grief to Isaac and Rebekah. A couple of things to think about. When the oldest got married, when Abraham's heir got married, who arranged it? Abraham. I kind of get the impression that Esau didn't give Isaac a chance to make an arranged marriage for him. It's another sign of Esau's character, because he should have waited for his father to make that arrangement. Instead, he went off and did his own thing, which was totally against what I'm pretty sure Isaac would have said. Mm-mm. Okay? So now we're set up for Jacob and Esau next week. I really hoped I was going to get through that. I tried. We're only a little off, so about a chapter off right now where we should be. So thank you.